Sure. And welcome to Shattering Myths. I'm your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning here on the Genesis Communication Network, I strive to expose the beguiling and the destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you listen, your eyes may be opened and you may ultimately change your mind towards some of these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission here is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. And this morning, we have a guest who I have known for a very long time who is going to help us in that pursuit. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance, you'll be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. This morning, we will continue our pursuit to understand Matzah, the most important day of the year. Our phone number for those who would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything I have to say or our guest, Waleed Shabbat, has to say this morning is 877-300-7645. At the top of his homepage, which is Shabbat, Shoebat.com, we read that Waleed Shabbat, former Muslim Brotherhood member and now peace activist. Hello, Waleed. How are you?
Good, Yada. How are you?
Great. Our listeners know that we have known each other for a very long time. We were introduced by a mutual friend. And when I first met you, the thing that I was most impressed by is that in a world of people who have given up thinking, who don't seem to have any interest in being logical, people who favor opinions and prefer not to have to invest the time to research the evidence so that they can not only know what has happened or what has been said, but also process it logically, that you were one of the few people that I had encountered along life's way that still embraced these two things. And my sense is that those traits have served you well for all of these years.
Well, I thank you for that. I guess we're birds of a feather. We've been, me and you, I think I've you know, spoken with you years ago when I was in Concord, California. I remember, and you were an activist. You wrote the great book that, you know, went around, Tea with Terrorists, I remember. And we shared the same frustrations with fighting this onslaught of criticism, ridicule, slander that permeates in the media, attacking the messenger instead of the enemy that we are facing and dealing with. Much has developed since then. Today, we're called Islamophobes. We're called xenophobe. We're called all kinds of names just because we chose what Americans, all Americans ought to do, and that is to adapt critical thinking. Critical thinking is a good germ in America that has vanished lately, especially after the rise of Islamic fundamentalism and the nations that we've seen in the Arab Spring, which was hailed by both on the right and the left. And shame on the right as well.
Yeah, I agree. We're partly in agreement here. Just the slight disagreement would be that, I think Islam has capitalized on America's lack of critical thinking. In fact, lack of critical thinking around the world. I think the lack of critical thinking, this notion that being judgmental is a sin as opposed to the most valuable thing that someone can do, is actually...
We agree. There's nothing we disagree there.
Yeah, but I think it's a derivative of a much older problem. I think it was... it is the moral replacement code of socialist secular humanism, and that socialist secular humanism has embraced Islam because they have a common enemy. And as a result, yes, we're seeing Muslims not having invented the tool that they are deploying, but capitalizing on the tool. Muslims don't often invent anything of profound importance, this being something profoundly counterproductive. But Something about Islam dumbs people down to the point that they seldom think, which is why you, as a former Muslim, you are a unique individual. May I? I'm going to say two things about the tagline at the top of your homepage. If I had read that 10 years ago, I would have read former member of the PLO, and now it says former Muslim Brotherhood member. Can you tell our listeners why those things are both true?
Absolutely. In fact, many criticize me and say the Muslim Brotherhood wasn't even active in the 70s. That's not true at all. The Muslim Brotherhood was very active. Hajj Amin al-Husseini was a Muslim Brotherhood active with Adolf Hitler. In fact, he was going to execute my grandfather for selling land to the Jewish National Fund. It is very active, and in fact, you have the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade in the PLO. Today they call it the PA. They just changed the name to make it sound more moderate of some sort. Nevertheless, it's still a terror organization. Well, the question I always ask everybody, what is Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade? Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade is a fundamentalist Muslim exactly akin to the Muslim Brotherhood that carries out terrorist attacks that was part of the PA. So nobody can argue and say that the PLO is void of being very active with the Muslim Brotherhood. Yasser Arafat complimented Yahya Ayyash, the first suicide belt, suicide bombing came from a Palestinian in Yahya Ayyash with a suicide belt. And he was complimented by Yasser Arafat left, right, and center. There is not much difference in the PLO or the PA. Sure, it aspires for socialistic and secular ideologies. But when it comes to jihad against the Jews, against Israel, they use 100% Sharia law, jihad, and martyrdom. No difference. Yeah, so there is much miss in the West in the labeling schemes of things, correct, in which they don't understand. These are people cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, every Islamic terrorist organization that we know today is, with exception of Hezbollah, which is Allah's party and is a derivative of Shia Islam, is really a derivative of the Muslim Brotherhood. They have all come from that same wellspring. So Fatah and the PLO were actually embraced by and conceived by and generated by, if you will, initially guided by the Muslim Brotherhood. They are all one and the same.
Yes. And I actually do agree with you when it comes to the issue you brought up with secular humanism, the liberal movement in America. It is in agreement with the Islamists. It's not most people on the right or the conservative. They think that, you know, maybe it's the liberal is a useful idiot for the Muslims. No, that's not true. The liberal movement in America is not just a useful idiot. It is in agreement because the first myth in America is that Islam is a conservative religion. It's not a conservative whatsoever. We have al-Ishtirakiyya al-Islamiyya, Islamic socialism. The Big Bang, many of the think tank of the Muslim movement and the Slikwilis in America talk about Islam and the Big Bang. Life doesn't begin at the moment of conception. All these things tickles the ears of the liberals, and as well as they collaborate with each other. It's agreement. They both have an agreement to destroy the Christian, the Jewish, the biblical concepts that are in America that's been here laid from time immemorial.
Yeah, you're the second aspect of your line. I don't think you actually embrace. I know I don't. You say that you are now a peace activist. I don't try to sponsor peace. I am more akin. I'm more akin with Yahusha and with Yahweh, who came to bring division, not peace. And your rhetoric is still geared in that direction, which is it's important that we understand the distinction between things, and it's only when we understand the distinction between things that we can understand what we're up against. And so you still seem to be a man focused on making clear distinctions.
Yes, I don't choose my advertisements. I have people that write them up. I don't even look at them most of the time.
Yeah, that was really pretty funny. You know, in fact, even the name of your book, if I may, it's called Embracing Islamophobia. A former Muslim Brotherhood activist makes the case for Islamophobia, which can be purchased at at Shobat.com, which is Shobat.com, Amazon, and Barnes & Noble. In fact, if you just type into the Google search and embracing Islamophobia, it will bring you to each of those options. It is interesting to me because phobia is from the Greek word phobos. Phobos is from the verb that is phi bomia, which means to put into fear, to be terrorized, to be in dread, and to strike terror. So you would be embracing Islam's tendency to strike terror if you read the title literally. But I think what you're actually trying to say is that the few of us who have the compassion and the courage have been willing to invest the time to learn the truth about Islam and expose and condemn the religion for its destructive influence on everyone, including Muslims, are labeled Islamophobes, and therefore the world should embrace the Islamophobes and should become someone who is labeled an Islamophobe, even though those few of us who do this have no fear whatsoever of the religion.
Right. This is the whole crux of the matter. There is no such thing as people who do critical thinking on Sharia law to condemn Sharia law are Islamophobes. They're not Islamophobes. In fact, the book argues that it is the other side with the phobia. It is Islamophobia phobia.
Right.
So philosopher Pierre Benn made a great point about this. The critique of Islam is not a phobia. It's, in fact, courage. Critique is never a phobia. Phobia is irrational fear. In fact, so the definition, when they say you're Islamophobe, is really a false definition. It's a definition that applies to them.
Correct.
It is, usually the enemy is the one that is guilty of the very things they accuse us of.
Correct. That's almost universally true in politics and religion. Those who try to defend politics and religion almost always slather those who are bringing a message that they cannot refute with whatever they themselves are guilty of. And in the case of Islam, every Muslim is actually afraid of Islam. In fact, the Quran says, "He who fears will obey." And so it is by threatening to kill any Muslim who rejects his faith, it is by Allah saying that anyone who questions their faith ceases to be a Muslim, whereby good Muslims are ordered to kill them, that most Muslims are afraid of their religion. We'll return with Waleed Shabbat, Embracing Islamophobia, and with Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Shattering Myths. We're talking with a very good friend of mine, someone I've known for a very long time, someone I respect a great deal because of his relentless pursuit of evidence and reason. He's written a new book called Embracing Islamophobia. He's actually, I'm not sure if co-author is the right term, but certainly had contributions made by an individual who's been on this program many times, Ben Barak. So it is in that book, for that book, that the following line appears on your website, Waleed. You probably didn't write this, but let me share it with you anyway and get you to comment on it. It says, "Truth always defeats lies, but until it actually becomes the weapon of choice for the righteous," is misused here, the victims of those lies, let me change it to that, "will always fail because they can neither compete with nor relate to the cunning and deceit inherent in the lies of the various forms of jihad." So you have concluded, or at least it has been written in your name, that truth is a more powerful weapon than our bullets and bombs.
Well, usually all the time in history, eventually the tyrannies will end. It's always the case because humanity itself cannot tolerate the massive destruction that tyrannies do cause. Look at the French Revolution, it ended. Look at Nazism, it ended. We have a case of communism in Russia. It's still going on, of course, but the liberal movement will end at some point in time in which, because the element of evil always causes death, mayhem, and destruction. And human being in general ends up waking up in the, you know, when it's too late, of course. And there's the Almighty. You know, the Almighty is always, intervenes in the future. And that's why we always believe, we always forget the most important element, and that is God. He's not an element, he's God. But it is, he is the most important, deity that watches after humanity continually.
Yeah, I know. We would view perhaps him differently. As relates to Islam, I'm going to agree with you. In the future, he will intervene, because he has said he will intervene to stop the onslaught of Islam, because in not too many years from now, Waleed, Muslims in a united front are going to not only attack Israel, but enter Israel, and God's not going to stand for it. So as it relates to ending this tyranny, which is now almost 1,400 years old, you're right. God is the one who's finally going to stop this tyranny. We are actually in complete agreement, though, on the word spoken truthfully, evidence and reason being the only effective tactic to deploy against a religion. That it is my conclusion that when countries like America resort to bullets and bombs to lash out and invade countries like Afghanistan and Iraq while embracing the religion, that all they do is embolden the religious and make the situations worse. That it is actually suicidal what America did in Iraq and Afghanistan, that we would have been vastly more successful. I mean, you can't even compare the difference had we approached what happened on 9/11 by simply reading from the Quran and Hadith and explaining that 9/11 was a outgrowth of fundamentalist Islam, that it was Islam as it was lived by Muhammad.
Correct. But let's also make sure that we examine the whole facade of moderate Islam as well. You look at a country like Turkey, which the United States is embracing. It's part of NATO. Mm-hmm. It tries to play the facade of moderate Islam. Let's not forget it. By peace, he will deceive many. I believe, you know, I'm a Bible believer, just like as you. And I've always questioned, I love to question, why is it that when we look at the text of the Bible, when the Messiah is fighting a nation and the nation is mentioned by name, why is it always these nations today are Muslim? In fact, you look at Zechariah 9, for example. He goes and fights this area in the north called Yavan. And when you look at Yavan, it's Ionia. Ionia is in Turkey. The Turks are through and through sprinkled in the Bible itself. In Ezekiel 28, chapter 30, sorry. There's Lydia mentioned on the day of the Lord. Lydia is Turkey. When the Messiah talks about Pergamum, you know, that's the seat of Satan. We ignore much of the text of the biblical narrative because it does address Islam. Yet
let me just clarify things, because our listeners will want to know this. I don't use the term Bible because it's the name of a pagan sun goddess, and yet everything that you've quoted thus far I would consider to be from God, including the citation from Revelation. While we reject most of the Christian New Testament, I do accept the eyewitness accounts of Matanyahu, Yahochanan, and the revelation given by Yahusha to Yahochanan. And everything that you cited is accurate. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yana. We're here with a good friend, Waleed Shabbat, who has written a new book called Embracing Islamophobia. And in the last segment, Waleed cited a number of prophecies, all of which point to Islam. And I'd like to pursue that just a moment with you, Waleed. The first statement, scripturally, regarding Islam would probably be the prophecy associated with Ishmael and his descendants, where a messenger of Yahweh says that they will be wild asses of men, that their hands will be raised against their brothers' hands against them, and they will live in hostility with the entire world. It reads like today's newspaper. And, of course, Muhammad claimed that Ishmael was his forefather and the forefather of Islam, playing along nicely with the prophecy. And the next would be in the reference to Esau. Esau is actually the Quranic character Esau, which is thought to be Jesus by those who don't do their homework. Esau is the one person that God called out by name to say that he hates. Now, God also called out Sheol, which was Paul, to say that we ought to be very, very careful about him because he leads people astray. But of Esau, God says, I hate him because of his embracing of Ishmael's daughter and embracing of Ishmael's religion. So God, who is into free will, doesn't have much tolerance for Islam, which is not only submission, but a religion where the God is modeled after Satan.
Absolutely. Arabia, you know, in fact, you know, just to go further, what you said is always Ishmael is the case of being the wild ass. His hand mm-hmm. will be against his brothers and vice versa. We see Arabia has, you know, basically the inception of Islam came from Arabia. And if people only research the Bible for the name Arabia, they will find out that really it agrees, everything agrees with what you said regarding right. Ishmael. Arabia yeah. is in Isaiah 21. In fact, its destruction is pretty much well described in the Bible. Even in the book of Isaiah, it's described with the oil, the pitch. In the Hebrew, the yeah. word is zifet. I believe yes. it's Isaiah 34. In which it will burn forever and ever. Isaiah 21 is very remarkable because there it addresses Babylon, you know, is fallen. It is the reference to the destruction of the future Babylon that the Bible talked about, which is, by the way, is in Arabia. I ask the question from all scholars that I run into, why is it that when the Bible addresses this future Babylon, it never once uses any of the vicinities or the cities in any of the ancient Babylonian cities? There's no mention of Babel, Sumer, Akkad, Erech, the regions or the vicinities. There's always in Duma, Dedan, Qidar. These are terminologies that Americans are not used to, but they got to start looking at some geography here. It's very important. Duma, Dedan, Qidar, within the vicinity of this Babylon that the Bible talks about, every one of the references is in Arabia. So Arabia is a central focus of God's destruction in the end, with its oil wealth and all of it will be destroyed. By who? By Iran. Iran rising right now, in which it says, arise, O Elam. Elam is Persia, Iran. You know, it destroys Arabia. And today we see the animosity between the Persians and the Arabs, the Shia and the Sunni divide as well. We see it in Syria. We see it in Bahrain. We see it in Iraq. So there is this divide, if you will. Evil always divides within itself, eventually, to self-destruct, and this yeah. is what will happen in the end.
Yeah, the hand of their brothers against their brothers, and what we're witnessing in Syria today is a proxy war, because the United States right. invaded Iraq and gave Iraq to Iran. Iran is vastly more powerful than the nation would have been otherwise. In other words, the United States facilitated a negative prophecy, and now nations like Saudi Arabia, which is the seat of the most fundamentalist form of Sunni Islam, are fighting a proxy war against the Shias in Syria. I mean, that war exists because the Arabians, the Saudi Arabians, are afraid of the increase in power now borne by Iran as a result of America's invasion in Iraq. And all of this is playing directly into the hands of the predictions that Yahweh made. He is always correct, and the consequence of all of this, though, is really grievous upon the world, because it's going to bring in World War III.
Absolutely correct. But we have to look at this struggle between Iran, the Shia, and the Sunni, in which, in the end, the dominating factor will be Turkey. which is a Sunni entity, which is very interested in the bone of contention in Syria today. So as Iraq fell, and now we see Iran rising, and it's cyber-rattling, the West is being fooled by what is called moderate Islam. In this case, they hold hands with Turkey. They put Patriot missiles in Turkey. They are in NATO. And we're collaborating with the greater entity when it comes to this Islamic threat.
Let me ask you just a blunt question. Is there such thing as moderate Islam?
No. There is no such thing as moderate Islam. In fact, I asked a question from James Woolsey, the head of the CIA. I said, you know, show me the moderate Muslim scholar that you're thinking about.
Yes.
And he named Nizar Qabbani. I said, Dino Nizar Qabbani says when the Mahdi appears, the Jewish, the Christian will disappear, will be vanished.
Right.
In fact, the myth of Sufi Islam, because you have right. also Faisal Abdul Rauf, the man behind the Ground Zero Mosque. He's a Sufi
right.
Muslim.
Right.
He's not a peaceful Muslim. There's no difference between him and Osama bin Laden. One says, I will do it by an explosive act vis-a-vis Osama bin Laden. The other is saying, I will do it by intimidation act, in which Faisal Abdul Rauf says, now I fear about your air traffic since you don't want to allow us to build a mosque. You know, so one does it with a tie and a suit, which is more dangerous than an honest enemy like Osama bin Laden, who says, I want to kill you.
Yes.
You better submit or I will kill you.
What's interesting, though, Waleed, is that that the former CIA director would have to cite a Sufi Muslim. What percentage of Muslims are Sufis?
Well, it's a smaller percentage. You know,
yeah.
in Egypt,
a fraction of 1%.
Okay, that's correct. It's a very
yeah.
small percentage.
So, to be a Sufi Muslim, you essentially have to disregard the majority of what is in the Quran and Hadith, and you kind of go off on a spiritual journey. Its heart is the same, which is pure evil. But to cite a Sufi Muslim to say there's such thing as moderate Islam is to cite a sect of Islam that doesn't even represent 0.1% of the total.
Yes, but it also represents the same violence as the rest.
Of course, because there is no Islam without Muhammad, and Muhammad was a terrorist.
Absolutely, it's a sword. It's look, Naqshbandi Sheikh Uzun al-Hajj, you know, he is a leader in the Naqshbandi Sufi Islam. He is a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. I have a quote verbatim from him. It says, if so God wills, we shall construct a Sharia monarchy for in a Muslim land, there can be no republic. I am weaving a rope to hang engineers, students, and in general, all those who write from left to right. In other words, anybody who uses the English language even will be executed. This is a leader in the Naqshbandi Sufi Muslim movement in the Muslim Brotherhood. So you can't find, this has been my question for years, show me the scholar that you consider moderate Muslim, and I will entertain the thought, but there's no such thing. I haven't
yes.
seen it yet.
Yeah, because the Quran itself and the Ninth Surah, which was the second to last handed down, defined the so-called peaceful moderate Muslim, and it said of those so-called peaceful moderate Muslims, that they cease to be Muslims, they become hypocrites, and therefore they must be dealt with as a former Muslim, as an apostate. And doesn't Allah say of the peaceful, moderate Muslim that not only are they hypocrites, but the good Muslim jihadist must kill them so that Allah can torture them in the hottest places of hell?
Absolutely. Look at Egypt. You know, you have what they call secular Muslims, what the West calls secular Muslims. They're really struggling vehemently, but they're not really, you know, peaceful because of Islam. They're peaceful despite of Islam. They are, people are people. They're individuals. And so there are many secularists, you know, they're mostly liberal. So, you know, they believe in humanity and all these things that adapted from modernistic world. They're not really Muslim by definition.
They're not leaders. They're not leaders in the Muslim community. You cannot be a leader, a spokesperson in the Islamic community unless you are a fundamentalist. And if you're a fundamentalist, you are a jihadist. All good Muslims are terrorists. Islam makes them that way. It's a fairly simple statement of fact once you understand what Islam represents. You know, there's a a great deception and going on now, and since it affects our worlds so egregiously. In this segment and the next, I'd like to switch our conversation a bit to this myth of moderate Islam and of moderate Muslims seeking to impose democracy, and why the United States is fighting on the side of the greater of two evils in Syria. Most recently, for example, there's this realization that chemical weapons have been used. But the likelihood is those chemical weapons were actually deployed by the jihadists, which are the greater of the two evils in this civil war. Could you speak a bit on that, Waleed?
Yes, the Syria situation, in fact, the chemical issue. I have looked into the Arabic language. And I'm an Arabist. I look at Arabic language sources all over the place. And in fact, I just issued a report yesterday with my son Theodore Shubat on the amount of weaponry that was captured by the Free Syrian Army. The Free Syrian Army, even I show video in which they lob the Scud missile. They have Scud missiles. They have SAM-7s.
Right.
They are on the verge of really toppling Syria. And everybody sees the videos. They're jihadists with beards. They're infiltrated into Syria from all over the Muslim globe to wage war, to basically thwart nationalism. The idea of Islam is really to destroy the idea of nationalism. And so, you know, we see the writing on the wall. Syria is going to collapse, and it is the second largest hub for the Muslim Brotherhood after Egypt. Hafez al-Assad, the father of Bashar al-Assad, have massacred the Muslim Brotherhood to stop the influx of jihadis into Syria. Yet the West seems to think that the idea of Bashar al-Assad being a thug akin to Hosni Mubarak, and they want to remove nationalism from all over the Middle East and institute Islamic fundamentalism, which behooves me to think that the West has been deceived.
Hang on to that thought. We'll return with our last segment of Shattering Myths in a moment. Hello and welcome to the final segment of the news hour of Shattering Myths. We're here with Waleed Shabbat. Waleed Shabbat was a former member of the PLO and the Muslim Brotherhood. He has done an enormous amount of research regarding the nature of Islam and its consequence in the West, both for Muslims and for non-Muslims. He has recently written a book called Embracing Islamophobia, which you can purchase at either Shabbat.com, that's S-H-O-E-B-A-T.com, or Amazon or Barnes & Noble. We were talking about Syria. Waleed, I was comfortable posing the question to you because I was confident that aware of the facts, understanding the situation in Syria, that you would accurately convey its consequence. It is so obvious in Syria that as bad as Assad is, that he is infinitely better for Syria and for the Middle East than those who oppose him. That those who oppose him, who are being aided by America, are fundamentalist Muslims. They are jihadist. And when they take control of that country will be in not only far worse for its own people, but will be far worse for Israel, for America, and the world as a whole. Is that not true?
It's very true. In fact, I was on Fox News the day. Even look at Egypt. During the Arab Spring, they split the screen in half, and they brought this Egyptian guy who says I was basically full of it. I didn't know what I was talking about. I said, this is an Islamic takeover. And I was attacked by David Asman and Fox News. Look, now you posed the question about moderate Islam, you know. They think there is moderate Islam playing as a role in these wars, but it's not, you know. Moderate Islam, you know, is using an alkaline to cover up the acid reality. You know, this is exactly what's going on, using an alkaline. And that is, you always get the quotes. Look at the Omar Declaration, don't kill children and women, so on and so forth. Yet you have Al-Ghazali who calls for killing women and children, destroying monasteries, killing everybody. So, you know, this is what's going on. We're being lured by the alkaline of the slick willies of the Islamist movement to forget the acid reality. Syria is a bone of contention. It's a major bone of contention. And the West has been lured to think that if we topple the Syrian regime, we could topple the Iranian regime because Iran steps itself into Iraq. This is, you know, and then from Iraq to Syria to the northern borders of Israel. So this way, if we stop Syria and if we remove the bone of contention there and give it to the Sunnis, then we will basically cut the line of the Iranian expansion in the region. And that's basically have been false because we forget that north of Syria is Turkey. And Turkey is also looking at Syria as a bone of contention. And Turkey is not a moderate. There is no such thing as moderate. It's a fundamentalist country that wants to basically eradicate Israel. Erdogan's statements about Jerusalem has been quite clear.
Well, the problem here, of course. Yeah, the problem here, of course, is that that Sunni Islam is no better than Shia Islam. And so if Syria were to fall into the hands of Sunni Mujahideen, of jihadists, it will actually be worse than if it were to fall into the stay in the hands of a quasi-secular dictator, Assad. You know, whether if Hezbollah were to take over Syria and be running Syria, then the Syria under Hezbollah would be very similar to the Syria under the jihadists who are supposedly fighting for their freedom. But if you're comparing Syria as it is now to Syria under the jihadists, it's far worse in this notion that giving a country to Sunni terrorists is better than it being controlled by Shia terrorists is absurd. Saudi Arabia is every bit the enemy of the West that is Iran.
Correct, absolutely. And this is why it is so dangerous, because the West and the world in general, it does not want to address the issue of Saudi Arabia. Not even Fox News wants to address the issues of Saudi Arabia and the issues of Turkey and the takeover of the AK Party, the Ergun Kohn fiasco in which they began to imprison generals and you know, anybody who writes an article against Turkey, and even mentioning the Armenian issue. Even you had Hillary Clinton, you know, condemned everyone talking about the Armenian issue. Yet we had Israel succumb to Erdogan and bow to Erdogan, apologizing for the flotilla issue. So we know we're not addressing that one. We're addressing Iran. But Iran is the lesser of the two evils when it comes to the combination of Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey. That's a much bigger beast than we think.
Yeah. Well, Ed, I'd love to have you back on another program. You add so much insight into what is wrong with Islam and the world in general. We'll be back with Shattering Myths after the break.
Pharmacist Ben Fuchs has learned the importance of good fats for good health. Good fats are essential fatty acids, and they're called essential because they're necessary for good health.